In the last part of verse 26, we find our text for tonight. Then began men to call upon the name of the Lord. In chapter 5, verse 5, it tells us that Adam lived 930 years and he died. So in less than 1,000 years, eight generations of man has now lived on the earth outside the protection of the sacred garden of God's presence. I read somewhere that one of the commentaries I read that it's possible that in Adam's lifetime he might have produced as many as a million descendants throughout the earth. In the last study, we found the first human birth, Cain. We found the first human death, Abel. The first murder, when Cain murdered his brother. The first banishment, when God cast him away, told him he'd be a wanderer and a vagabond the rest of his days. And the first willful separation from God's presence. Cain left and it didn't bother him to leave. In our study this evening, we will find several new firsts among humanity. And we'll also find one blessed spiritual hope that God gave to Adam and Eve. First of all, from verse 16 down through verse 24, we find the culture of the ungodly. This is what I call Cain's world. That survey that I just shared some of the results with you would fit in very well with the changes that took place in Cain's world. The result of sin in any culture, no matter where it is, no matter what it is, whether you're talking about educated, civilized, I use that word loosely, America, or among the head-hunting cannibals of the New Hebrides, the result of sin in any culture is secularism. It says that Cain went out and dwelt in the land of Nod. That word Nod means a place of wandering. And carnal man never has been, and he never will be, settled until he has God in his heart. Men and women without God. They may laugh, and they may appear to be contented in this flesh, but there's always an empty spot in their soul. It tells us there that Cain took a wife. He knew his wife. People have asked me all my life, where'd Cain find his wife? Well, make it bluntly, Cain married his sister. The Bible doesn't give us all the details of how many children Adam had and what the relationship was, but if Adam and Eve were the only two people on the earth that God created, then it would of necessity, if Cain found a woman, it would have to be his sister. People say, well, that's bad, and in our day and time, we certainly would not approve of a fellow marrying his sister or first cousins or anything else, but there's two or three good reasons why it wasn't a problem in biblical times. First of all, it was not unusual. If you'll read the history of the ancient Egyptians and the Assyrians, to protect the royal lineage of the house of Pharaoh, Pharaoh's sons almost always either married their sisters or married their first cousins. The second thing is that at this point in time, remember we're still in the first generation after creation. At this time, even though man's depravity had filled his soul, there was no genetic deterioration. There doesn't appear to be any contamination between the family lines. And there's a lot of people who have thought this out that are smarter than I am that think that that deterioration, that contamination started after the flood, even though after the flood, the same thing happened again. It was also to be understood that it was in God's allowance for two people to populate the earth. He told Adam and Eve that they were to replenish the earth. They, as far as we know, they're the only two people God ever created. Everybody else on the earth, up until the time of the flood, was the product of the relationship between Adam and Eve and their descendants. After the flood, when we get there to in the book later on in the book of Genesis, we'll find out that after the flood there was nobody left but Noah and his immediate family. And so any children that were produced and grandchildren and so on also had to be from their lineage as well. Just not any other way. That makes sense. People try to dodge it, but they end up painting themselves in a corner and have to stay there till the paint dries, and doesn't change the fact anyway. There are certain qualities about the heritage of Cain. As I said a moment ago, man is by nature destined to be unsettled and unsatisfied as long as he exists without a relationship with God. I know people that have a relationship with God. I'm talking about a real relationship with God, and they can be happy with almost nothing. I mean, I've met some people. We talk about ourselves being poor, but I'm talking about people that don't have two sticks to rub together. We talk about somebody that don't have two quarters to rub together. And two people don't have two sticks to rub together. You know, they don't have a change of clothes. Some of them don't have any clothes. And yet, if they know God and His Son, the Lord Jesus Christ, and they have some understanding of the Scriptures, some understanding of the love of God, the forgiveness of God, they're contented. And they're happy. And they're at peace. And I know people who are millionaires. And famous. And got more stuff than they know what to do with. They're absolutely miserable. People sit around and envy them. Say, I wish I could be like old John Doe, Joe Jones over there. Or John Doe, whatever his name might be. You know, he's got money to burn. And plenty to eat. A big house. Fine cars to drive. Everybody thinks he's special. I see his name in the paper all the time. Well, the day after he dies, he won't have any more than you do. He's going to leave everything he's got. Cain, it tells us, left his family. He left his roots. He left Adam and Eve. He went over to this place called Nod, which is somewhere east of Eden. And he began to wander. And he lost his family roots. Now, I'm going to say some things tonight that you might think are a little bit radical, and they might be, but I thought this through a good bit over the last 30 or 40 years. In this county, and I've lived in Mercer County the biggest part of my life, this county lost a tremendous amount when, you know, there was a big stink about the school systems merging here, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. That was not the issue. The real issue was 25 years before that, 1950s, when they got rid of all the little local high schools like Rose Hill and Cornishville and Salvisa and McAfee and Shakertown, and they consolidated them into one school, and they did away with all the schools. Because all those little communities where people built their lives around the churches and the schools and families and little country stores, that was a society into itself. And when that was taken away, people changed. And they've never been the same. And now we're getting to the place where small places like where we live. If you listen to the people that predict the future, they say there's going to come a time when either little small places where we live will either get self, they'll become independent, or they'll die. And more people are going to have to move to cities. I read just the other day that gasoline in California is expected to hit $5 a gallon by the 1st of March. When you can't afford to move anymore, when you can't afford to travel anymore, then you either become localized or you move into a big communal center. That's what happens when you leave your roots, is you lose your values. You lose your values. It's nice to come back home for holidays or come home for a family reunion. But I've heard I've heard people that live in Atlanta, Georgia, lived in a neighborhood for, 5-10 years. They don't know the person who lives next door. Certainly don't know the person who lives 6 houses down the street, And people move in some other place. And saw the other day on TV, there was a fire in Savannah while I was down there preaching. And they were talking to this fellow, and people had died. And they asked this man, said, what kind of neighborhood? He said, I don't know. I didn't even know who they were. So, well, how long have you been living here? He said, well, about 5-6 years. That's what happens when people lose their roots. Now, there are values. I suppose there are benefits. But are the benefits worth what you lose? I can remember when Harrisburg was a metropolis. I remember when little places like Cardwell and Battle and some other little places like that, Stewartsville, they were booming communities. But when the little country stores closed up and the schools closed up, the communities disappeared. Now, people still live there, but they've lost the relationship with each other. It tells us there that he built a city. When you leave your family, you tend to get together with people you don't know. He built a city where a lot of people could live in close physical proximity, but they do so without any heritage or without any community. Even in big cities. One of the things I found interesting about big cities, and I'm talking about 35, 40 years ago when I used to go preach in Detroit and New York and Chicago and some places like that, was every city had these ethnic neighborhoods. I remember preaching in a church in Detroit 30 years ago, I guess, or more. And most of the people in that church, I couldn't pronounce their names. I knew the pastor's name, but I couldn't pronounce his wife's maiden name. I couldn't pronounce some of her kin folks came to that church because they were all Polish people. I learned one Polish word, galumpkis. Every time I'd go preach up there, this old lady'd bring me a pan of galumpkis. It's stuffed cabbage rolls, I learned. But they had a culture of their own. They had their own unique foods. They had festivals in their communities of their folks. Now you go in a big city, nobody knows who anybody is. Just one big, big mess. Just one big mess. When people move into these communities, they become preoccupied with form, with function, with physical beauty or attractiveness. And Cain turns to self-appreciation. He builds a city and names it after his son. Now that's the height of vanity. Probably made him the mayor, for all I know. But the focus is on being somebody or making somebody rather than on worshiping God. Now, on a much smaller scale, the society and the culture that you live in today is exactly the same way. Only worse. Only worse. The vast majority of people in the society you live in today, don't even believe in the God of the Bible. They don't believe the Bible is the Word of God. And that's the foundation of our faith. Man without God must of necessity become full of pride and full of carnal passion. That's just man's nature. You take God out of the picture and we're all vain. We're all proud. Even with God in our hearts, it's all we can do to fight against pride in our attitudes and in our spirit. That was David's problem, and it was Solomon's problem. It was a problem of many people in the Bible. They became proud. They became worried about their image. They became worried about what people thought about them, not what God thought about them. This is a culture that loves itself. And if God gets in the way, they'll just have contempt for God. If you believe for a minute, I know this is a popular saying among conservative religionists in this country. If you believe for a minute that this is a Christian nation you live in, you are deceived. I mean horribly deceived. We might have in God we trust on our money, and I hope it stays there. We might have one nation under God in the Pledge of Allegiance, and I hope it stays there. But the vast majority of people in the United States of America are not Christians. And the vast majority of people in the United States of America don't believe the Bible is the Word of God, and the vast majority of people don't even believe in God. Not the God of the Bible, anyway. Now, as human knowledge rapidly expands, it leads man farther and farther from God. I read somewhere some time ago that man learned more from 1950 to 1970 than he had in all the history before that. And what he learned from 1950 to 1970 doubled between 1970 and 1985. And it doubled again between 1985 and 1990. And it tripled between 1990 and the year 2000. And I suppose somebody's going to come along and say it's quadrupled in the 2000s. We know a lot. And we learned a lot, but what we learned has led us farther from God instead of leading us closer to God. And it's made us lose our consciousness that we are dependent upon God for everything. The modern man, I hear this term, the postmodern America. I don't know exactly what that means, but whatever it means, that the postmodern America doesn't believe that it needs God. It believes it can get by just fine by itself. But my friends, God controls all knowledge. And there is no complete understanding without the enlightenment of God. Man knows a lot of stuff nowadays, but he doesn't understand what it means. He knows a lot of stuff. But he doesn't know what it means. You ought to be able to read a history book and see God in it. You ought to read a science book and see God in it. You ought to be able to read a psychology book and see God in it. And if you can't see God in those things, then what you have are just a bunch of facts. It's not understanding. Cultural advancement has never generated spiritual improvement. In fact, the more advanced man gets culturally and intellectually and materially, the farther he declines spiritually. Remember when Adam and Eve were running around in the garden buck naked? They didn't know much, but they had everything. They had a place to sleep and a place to eat, plenty to eat, and they had personal fellowship with God. And as soon as they started getting clothes and jobs and advancement and knowledge, they kept getting farther and farther. Now we got Cain. He's gone over to the east of Nod and built him a city, named it after his son. Now in the verses between verse 17 and verse 24, there are about seven major changes in either intellectual or cultural diversity among Cain's descendants. Let's look at those for just a minute. First of all, in verse 17, we find the first grandchild. I don't have any grandchildren, but everybody tells me how wonderful they are. But this one wasn't so hot. Enosh, or Enoch, however you want to pronounce it, it's spelled two different ways in different places, lives in a city that is named in his honor. It's the first city ever. Now, we are proud here in Harrodsburg. We are the first permanent settlement west of the Allegheny Mountains. But we're far from the first city ever in human civilization. But Enoch lived in Enoch, the first city ever. In verse 18, you'll miss this if you're not careful. Enoch had a son named Irad. And Irad had a son named Mahujael. And Mahujael beget Methusael. Now what I want you to see is that at the end of both those men's names are the two letters E-L. L is God's primary name. It's the root of Elohim. So here we have the first people taking a name that incorporates God's name even though they didn't know God. We got a lot of people today talk about knowing God that don't know God. These are the first two. So here we see an advancement, or a, if you want to call it an advancement, we'll say a change in religion. And then there's a change in relationships. Look in verse 19. Here we find the first bigamist. And Lamech, who was the son of Methusael, took unto him two wives. The name of one was Ada, and the name of the other, Zillah. The first bigamist who violates God's designed order. God's order has always been one man and one woman. And you won't find polygamy practiced in any society that walks in harmony with God. None of them. There were, you say, but there are men in the Bible, even patriarchs, that had multiple wives. Yes. And you'll find out they all had problems as a result of it. In fact, of all the wives and the concubines of Solomon, he only had one son that really amounted to anything, and he was a devil, Rehoboam. And then we see a big change in commerce. In verse 20, Ada bare Jabal. He was the father of such as dwell in tents and of such as have cattle. We have here the first cattleman identified. He was a nomad. He didn't dwell in the city. He dwelt in the tents. He followed his business around. He was the first traveling salesman. How many of you, I know Johnny doesn't, but how many of you remember when almost every man in this county worked in this county? I remember before Corning was here. I remember when Cricketer came, some of the other factories. People worked in this community. They were farmers. They worked in grocery stores. They worked at the cheese plant. Some of you might remember when Harrodsburg had a frozen food locker and they had a bunch of employees down there. Here we find commerce moving beyond the cities and becoming independent. And then we see a change in the world of art. The first musician is found in verse 21. His brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of all such as handled the harp and the organ. Music throughout history has always been diametrically opposed. It either is utilized for the praise and worship of God, or it's used to cauterize the human soul and please his flesh. Now, I have an opinion, and that's all it is an opinion. You can have a different one, and I won't get mad at you. What most people call music in modern churches is nothing but noise. That's all it is. There's no praise. There's no worship. They have words that talk about God, but they don't say anything about God. They don't talk about sin. They don't talk about the blood. They don't talk about Christ. They don't talk about the cross. It's all to make you feel good. It's got a beat to make you pat your foot. Now, I didn't say this, but somebody told me one time that a dancing foot and a praying knee don't grow on the same leg. I think there might be some validity in that. And then we have industry being developed. Does this sound like the history of humanity? Have you people ever studied ancient history in high school or college and grammar school? Sounds like the development of history, doesn't it? In verse 22, Zillah, she also bare Tubal-Cain, an instructor of every artificer in brass and iron. Here was a man that not only knew how he was the first mechanical and chemical engineer, he knew he had learned how to work in brass, and he learned how to work in iron. Now, iron is too hard, and brass is too soft, and so Tubal-Cain reportedly was a developer of bronze, which is a good mixture to the first alloy. But he was a man that developed tools. If you can develop iron, you can build plows, and you can build implements. You can build swords and spears and weapons of war. In verse 23 and 24, we find the first sadistic psychopath in history. And Lamech, who was the son of Methusael and the first bigamist, said unto his wives, and the tone in the original language is he bragged to his wives, "Hear my voice, ye wives of Lamech, and listen to my speech, for I have slain a man to my wounding. I have murdered a fellow, and I have killed a young man to my hurt." Some translations say a child. Now, if you read that, it sounds like it was to his harm, but if you read it in the original language, it was to his joy. This man was bragging. A man messed with me and I killed him. A child wounded me and I took his life. The first psychopath. Cain's descendants were highly accomplished and progressive. And I guess we could commend that. Unfortunately, their progress and their accomplishments came about without worshiping God and without honoring the Creator who made them. And they established a downward path for humanity that has continued to the very hour in which you live. And will continue. And will continue until Jesus comes. By the way, verse 24 brings an abrupt end to Cain's family history. We don't read any more about them. His children are forgotten. His heirs are unheard of. Their accomplishments are swept under the rug. And the tone in verse 25 switches from the culture of the ungodly, the world of Cain, to the world of the godly, the culture of the godly, Seth's world. Adam, it says, knew his wife again, and she bare a son and called his name Seth. "For God," said she, "hath appointed me another seed instead of Abel, whom Cain slew." It's important for us to understand that Cain's corruption did not prevent God from completing his purpose. Occasionally I hear somebody who means well, I suppose, say, "Well, if God aims for you to do something and you won't do it, he'll just push you aside and get somebody else to do it." I don't believe that. If God aims for you to do something, you're going to do it. You'll do it in the strength of His power. You'll do it whether you aim to or not. You'll do it in spite of yourself. You'll do it under duress, or you'll do it of free choice, but you'll do it. And God's purpose is going to be done. Cain murdered Abel. And it's significant that Eve understood that Abel was the chosen seed. She didn't know it at first, but she has come to see it since then. And so He sent Eve another son, whose name Seth means the appointed one. Eve recognized that God's purpose was to come through Abel, who was called vanity when he was born. But he's been murdered by his brother Cain, and now his place is taken by Seth, the anointed one. He has been appointed. He has appointed me another seed instead of Abel, whom Cain slew. This gives new life and new hope that calms the fears of Adam and Eve regarding the fulfillment of Genesis 3:15. God had told them, I'm going to send someone, and this serpent will bruise his heel, but he will crush the serpent's head. And when Cain was born, she thought it was him. But now she understands. God sometimes lets us go a long way before He turns lights on. Genuine hope is always the product of God and is one of life's most precious possessions. And the absence of hope is one of life's greatest tragedies. We can really struggle through life and deal with situations and problems as long as we've got hope. I remember as clearly, I'll never forget it, I had such high hopes that my wife would recover and would live many years with me. And I still remember the Wednesday that God showed me so clearly, she's not going to live. And I felt so empty. I wasn't mad at God. Didn't argue with God. I don't argue with God. I find that's a losing proposition. But I sure felt empty because there was no hope. No hope. Genuine hope is one of God's greatest gifts. Now, we talk about the culture of Cain and his descendants. Let's talk for just a minute about the culture of Seth. Now, we don't learn much about Seth at this point. We'll learn much about him in the future. But the culture of Seth was one which trusted in God, one which rejoiced in God, and one which worshipped God. It may have been primitive by anybody's measurement, but his descendants were a people who knew the God of the Bible. They were a cultured people who understood how desperately man needs God. You want to know why the churches of America are by and large empty today? Why we don't hear of revival breaking out and God sweeping through the land with a mighty blast of a fiery wind? Why we don't hear people anymore crying out, oh God, be merciful to me? You know why? It's a simple answer. 2 weeks from today, I'm going to a hospital and I'm going to let a doctor cut my leg in two. Take the middle part of it out and throw it away and replace it with a piece of titanium. And that'll be followed by several days and weeks of a great deal of pain and a great deal of difficulty in learning to walk again and learning to make those muscles work again. And I don't look forward to it at all, but it's necessary. And if it wasn't necessary, I wouldn't do it. And as long as man and woman think they're getting along fine without God, they're going to keep going the way they're going. And the only way they're ever going to be turned around is for God to move. We can have all the programs we want to. We can sing 97 verses of Just As I Am and cry and blow snot and tell stories, and it won't mean anything. God's got to turn a light on somewhere. We're shut up to Him. Seth's culture was one which reverenced and respected God's name. People today don't respect God's name. I remember clearly when I was a child, and I'm convinced of this, that the wickedest man in this county had more reverence for the name of God than most preachers do today. There were certain curse words. You just didn't, even the worst man in this county, you didn't hear those words weren't used. And if somebody used them, it was shocking. It's a culture that expresses a love for God and a contempt for the flesh and for self. See, the society you and I live in just loves itself. It has a contempt for God and a love for self instead of a love for God and a contempt for self. In Seth, we see the lineage of Jesus of Nazareth. The Son of Man has continued not in the birth of Cain's children, but in the birth of Seth's son. It tells us in verse 26 that Seth had a son born to him, and he called his name Enos. And Luke 3:38, it tells us which was the son of Enos, which was the son of Seth, which was the son of Adam, which was the son of God. In Seth's line, we find the origin of public prayer and worship. Then began men to call on the name of the Lord. You know, it's always been a godly remnant that has kept the work and the promises of God going in this world. God's true churches have always been small. But God needs nothing more than surrendered hearts to do great work. He can take a ruddy-faced kid with a slingshot and 5 stones and kill a giant. He can take a worn-out old man who can't even hold his arms up and open the Red Sea and send 6 million people across on dry land. He can take a blind, stubby Jew converted to the gospel and send the message of grace to the whole known world. And not even have to buy a ticket to travel. It's an indication of the state of their times. Then began men. Cain has taken away his bunch. They've established an alternate culture. But God has sent Seth. It appears this is the first public revival of religion among men. Then began men to call on the name of the Lord. There's an evidence here of a significant change in the pattern of worship. Apparently Adam and Eve knew something about how God wanted to be worshipped, because that's what brought about the downfall of Cain and the murder of Abel. But now we see that moving from a family devotion to a public and community movement of praise and worship. They gathered together. There are three characteristics of Seth's lineage that I want to leave with you. First of all, it starts with God and His preeminence in all things. Cain's emphasis is on man and what he can do. Seth's emphasis is on God and what he can do. Cain saw man as glorious and full of potential. Seth views man as flawed and guilty and frail and needy. In fact, he named his son Enos, which means the frail one, the mortal one. The psalmist said in Psalm 103:15, as for man, his days are as grass, as a flower of the field, so he flourishes, for the wind passeth over it, and it's gone, and the place thereof shall know it no more. True religion views man as dependent on God and needful of divine mercy. Paul wrote in Romans 4:22, therefore it was imputed to him for righteousness. Now it was not written for his sake alone that it was imputed to him, but for us also to whom it shall be imputed, if we believe on him that raised up Jesus our Lord from the dead. You see, the knowledge of God sets aside all self-obsession. Man by nature is just caught up with himself. It's all about me. We know that. Was it Toby Keith had that song? I don't know about me. I don't know about me, 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 me. I was looking on Facebook to see if I had any messages today. And I saw a comment on there that I thought was completely out of place and out of color between two teenagers. And one of them basically said, I really don't give a rip about you or anything about you. And I'm tired of hearing about you. The undergirding message is, I want to hear about me. The culture you live in today is primarily operating in the pattern and in the attitude of Cain and his descendants. We really need a transformed civilization. But it's never going to be built by people who have lost their spiritual roots because they're dead in trespasses and sins. Such a society can only be established by people whose lives have been surrendered to God and have been regenerated by Him. Old John Knox said, give me souls. Pray to God, give me Scotland or I die. Today, folks don't even know who lives next door to them, much less care about their souls. The way of Cain is still the way of rebellion, still the way of destruction. But the way of faith is still the way of surrender and victory in the purpose of God. And Adam knew his wife again, she bare a son, called his name Seth. For God, said she, hath appointed me another seed instead of Abel, whom Cain slew. And to Seth, to him also there was born a son, and he called his name Enos. Then began men to call upon the name of the Lord. Two cultures, man and God. Two lines, Cain and Seth. Two ends, destruction and redemption. Amen.